This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. And, of course, from time to time, we have an opportunity to talk to a noted veteran Indiana economist, speaker, and column writer, Morton Marcus, about topics of interest involving the Hoosier State's economy. And how do things shape up these days in the age of coronavirus? Well, let's find out. Morton, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Always a pleasure.
Well, you have a number of your Eye on the Pie columns that focus in on something related to the COVID-19 virus, and some that kind of turned into all kinds of things. But let's take a look at the COVID-19 epidemic as it's turned into. Talk about, if you will, I guess one column in particular that is entitled, "Why Must We Stay Apart?" What are your concerns there?
Well, this is a question that I think many of us have asked. And it has to do with just the science of the way this virus spreads. You know, we've never faced anything like this. Our economy has never had a hit such as this. We got through World War II with, minimal discomforts. We had people working 24 hours a day. Now we have people at home 24 hours a day. And it's such a different environment. Almost every single person alive today, was not involved with the pandemic of 1918, 1919. So we just don't have experience here. And I think that many of our responses have been appropriate, but very different in different places. And this is always going to be the case in America because we're a very, very diverse people, and we just don't recognize that. I think this is one of the things that we should recognize, that we are not the kinds of families that are represented on television. So much that we see on television about American family life is not what we experience. My concern here is that what we recognize as this COVID-19 problem is that was something we haven't experienced before. And instead of, in a way, taking some pleasure in it, most people are just complaining about it. I haven't been very distressed by it, but that's because I'm retired. I'm not like people who are currently working, and they have every right to be concerned. Mm-hmm. There are people who are at home with their children. Well, I'm only at home with the dogs and cats, and my wife is out doing good things because other people are in a sick condition, so she's out there helping those who are having troubles. So we have lots of different experiences, and we have to understand that about ourselves. I've had a chance to do things that I've never done in my life. I sat here one day looking out at the few trees we have here, and I could actually, over the hours of the day, see the leaves that were coming forth. Now, I've never done that in my life. You know, people talk about sitting around watching the grass grow or watching the corn grow. Well, one day I had an opportunity to watch the leaves come out on the trees. And I think we have to understand that there are opportunities, there are things we can do that are very positive for ourselves and for our families. I know a lot of folks that I know, a lot of the fellows are finally working on those projects that they had in their garage for years, and we're going to get to, and some of them are getting to them. And that's a positive approach to what is a very uncomfortable situation, mm-hmm. but not one that we can't live through and in a way even celebrate.
I know you mentioned in the column about the need to, I guess, to take a better look at the research that's going to come about from all of this, and you think that that's going to have a benefit for the Hoosier economy in general, I imagine.
Oh, I think very definitely. Many companies are going to look at how they operate and figure out that there are things that they're doing that just aren't productive, that don't increase their revenues in any way, and are just ways of spending money. And this is, in some cases, going to cost jobs. Mm-hmm. But then there are employees who are going to say, I haven't had a job that I liked for a long time. If I'm going to make myself happy, I'm going to go out and I'm going to find a job that I prefer. And when people start hiring again, I'm an experienced worker, I'm going to find a job. And they may spend some of that time doing things like getting their resume in shape, and they may start thinking about how they present themselves. They may go through and throw out some of their old ties, which indicate that they haven't done an interview in 15 years. And maybe some of the employers won't expect a tie any longer. You know, there's changes that are going to take place here. They're small changes. It's not going to be excessively dramatic. But I think that people have an opportunity to improve themselves in this situation.
I know a couple of your On the Pie columns recently. One of them, I guess, the end of April, and the other one here, I guess, less than a month later, just a few weeks ago. Take a look at the region. Now, we're not necessarily talking about the Calumet region, as people up here, of course, call it, but we're just right. Talking regional governments and regions in Indiana in general. And one of them you talk about in particular about the issue about regions and about maybe now they're with this opportunity to do some redistribution because of the coronavirus pandemic and how it's changed our economy. That might come about. If you will, bring us up today about your thoughts about the regional government or regional opportunities, I should say, that are out there.
For Northwest Indiana, this has been something that's there every single day for the past 50 years at least. There are now, I believe it's 19 cities and towns in Lake County alone.
Mm-hmm.
19 of them. Why? This doesn't make any sense any longer. You know, we no longer travel by horse and wagon. We're in a situation where we're not really dependent on public transportation, and people can get around very easily. How much of a difference is there between Highland and Munster and Griffith? Sure. Each one has a history, and they remember certain things, and they each have high schools which they love and admire. That's fine, but there are many things that they could do together that would allow them to have their separate identities and still join together as a municipality. And we've got St. John, and we've got Dyer, and we've got Schererville. And again, it's the same kind of thing. Why aren't they more together? We've got how many chambers of commerce? Almost every one of them unnecessary. We've seen a few of them beginning to get together to recognize there's just no point to some of these differences. And you can then spread out and go over the county lines, which were just drawn on a map at some time that have no particular meaning, and ask yourself, aren't there things that we could do that would bring LaPorte and Porter and Lake County closer together? Is there really a need for Jasper and Newton to be separate counties? It doesn't make any sense at all. These forms of government that we have inherited from the 19th century, here we are 2 centuries later, 200 years later, and we're still using exactly the same format. And people say, well, you know, my town is my town, and it's a different place, and you're going to destroy my memories. Well, you can be in charge of your memories, and let's get on with the future. One of the things that has disturbed me, and it's not in any of my columns, but one of the things that has disturbed me in this epidemic is we spend every night on television and on the radio or in our newspapers celebrating the lives of people who have died. And yet, we have 220 children born in the state of Indiana every day. Every day, we have about 220. That's what we average. Why aren't we celebrating their births, and why aren't we thinking about their futures instead of spending so much time with the grief of death? the grief of death is legitimate, and it's wonderful to honor them, but we should spend more of our energy and more of our thinking on those who are just coming into our world. Mm-hmm.
And I know, too, that we talk here about new people born into the state of Indiana, which means that the young people will have to be educated. And one of the columns you have out fits in nicely with the fact that we just had a primary election at which some of the counties in Indiana have added on questions on school district referenda. In fact, one school district in Porter County, one school district here in Lake County just brought mm-hmm. it up on the polls here, and the concern about the referenda. And you have some very definite views about that and about the importance of education, public education in particular.
Well, I don't think there's any question about the importance of public education. I think what we have to ask ourselves is, what do we mean by education? And what I see some of these bond issues headed for is improving sports facilities. Well, I'm not against sports in high school. I don't think we should discontinue having sports in high school. But I don't know that we need to do them at the level that we do them in terms of the intensity and the amount of money that we spend on. If the people in Highland who support the Highland High School want their children involved in these things, there's a Highland Rotary Club, I suspect, and there may be a Highland Kiwanis Club, and let them adopt the sports programs to move them forward. I visited my school district here, and what I learned is that they needed to redo the locker rooms. And they needed to redo the locker rooms so they can attract athletes. Now, this sounds like college sports, not high school sports. Mm-hmm. But what's happened in the state of Indiana is that you can send your child to just about any high school you want to, and the state will see to it that the money is transferred from the high school where you reside to the high school where your child is going. And if you're doing that just because you're considering the future career or the pleasure of your child being on a team, that's not education. That's not education at all. That's sort of personal greed. And why are we committing public resources to this? I'm very concerned about that kind of activity where we have schools trying to attract athletes so that they can have winning records, so they can have a trophy when you walk into the school. That's not what education is about. I think those schools that put their best students, put their pictures into the entryway of the school instead of boosting their athletes. I was driving down, I guess it was Kennedy Avenue one day, and I saw these banners that are up on the light poles, and they all talked about their high school athletes. Mm-hmm. And Highland isn't alone in doing this. I'm not picking on them, but that's what the parents want. And why are we even doing that when we ought to be celebrating the restaurants that we have in town and celebrating the small businesses that we have in town instead of glorifying and magnifying the activities of our children, making them think that they're more important than they are because they're on a high school football team or basketball team or whatever it may be. That's a lack of understanding of the purpose of education. Parents are the problems that we have. Parents who don't really care about education and, in fact, are very happy to take their children out of school for an extended period of time if it means going with the traveling team somewhere on a weekend and getting away from doing homework and getting away from becoming a citizen of the United States.
Well, Morton, we always appreciate hearing your views on the stories. And whether
you mean my ranting. That's what you
No, no.
You enjoy my ranting.
Well, okay, we enjoy your ranting, too, especially when it has to do with Indiana's economy and communities in Indiana, in particular here in Northwest Indiana. And as always, we thank you for spending time with us today, and we'll have you back on again real soon with more Eye on the Pie columns to talk about.
Fine. I look forward to it. Thanks so much.
Morton Marcus is a noted Indiana economist, a writer, a public speaker, and you get to hear him here on Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Ivy Tech Community College is joining with the IU regional campuses in a very special agreement that is going to be of interest to all Ivy Tech students who are looking at higher education beyond their classes at their Ivy Tech campus. Let's find out more about it here. We have from Indianapolis, the Vice President of Academic Affairs for the Ivy Tech Community College, Dr. Russ Baker, with us. And Dr. Baker, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit more about the thoughts and the work behind the new agreement that Ivy Tech Community College has basically just signed, which started out with the Indianapolis campus, but is now expanded to all regional campuses with IU.
That's exactly right, Chris. I'll try to be concise in my answer, but in essence, what we wanted to do is take away the lack of certainty for students who want to begin at Ivy Tech, who for a variety of reasons are interested in getting the first 2 years of their bachelor's degree with Ivy Tech, and then they want to transfer to one of the four-year institutions. And in this case, one of the four-year regional IU campuses. So that would include IU Northwest, obviously, up there in Northwest Indiana, but it also includes IU Kokomo and Clear Down, IU Southwest or Southeast, et cetera. But what we wanted to do through this guaranteed admission agreement, Chris, is essentially provide students with a guarantee that if they meet certain criteria when they graduate from Ivy Tech, there's no question that they will be admitted. Their admission into the IU regional campus is, in fact, guaranteed. And at the end of the day, that's what this agreement does, is remove that lack of certainty.
How long would you say, in talking with your colleagues in the planning for this agreement, how long would you say that there's been discussion about the need to give Ivy Tech students an opportunity to make it easier for them, as well as for the universities, to be able to move them directly after they get their two-year degree, basically, I know for some, or general certificate, or however you want to consider it, to be able to go into study for a four-year degree? How much work has been involved, I guess, and how many years has it been? It seems that this has been really kind of in the planning stages, in a way.
Yeah, I'm kind of chuckling to myself because I was a history major growing up. That was my college degree, my master's degree. So sometimes my colleagues at Ivy Tech feel like I go too far into the history and too deep into the weeds on things like dates. So you're talking to my type of learning and my background when you ask a question like that. I'll try not to go too far into the weeds, but what I will say is that this has been worked on in various stages for more than 5 years. And some of my colleagues from other state universities have been a part of that. But what we've been working on for the last several years is a process where students who get their two-year degree in one of 18 different programs that are called Transfer Single Articulation Pathways, TSAP, can be sure that then when they transfer, all of that credit will transfer with them if they get accepted to the four-year university. So just to give a specific example, Chris, if a student wants to get a degree in criminal justice, and I'm using that as one of several examples I could give of a program area in this TSAP, they can get their Associate of Science degree from any of the Ivy Tech or Vincennes. Vincennes is included in this as well, just to be clear. They're not included in the Guaranteed Admission Agreement. That was an Ivy Tech initiative, but they are part of the TSAP program. A student can get their associate degree from Ivy Tech and Vincennes, and if they transfer to IU Northwest or another institution that has a criminal justice degree, they, for the last 5 years, since the fall of 2015, they've been able to know that all of their credit will transfer seamlessly. Mm-hmm. What they haven't been assured of, frankly, is that they will be admitted to the four-year university, because that was a separate process. And essentially, that's what this agreement does, is it takes away that question mark for the student, so that they know for sure that if they get a 2.5 in their associate degree at Ivy Tech and then want to go to IU Northwest to complete that degree, that their admission is guaranteed. So that's the real beauty of this, is it takes away that uncertainty. So a student, whatever age they may be, they don't have to be right out of high school, by the way, to take advantage of this. But if a student is wanting to enroll at Ivy Tech this fall, and then they want to go to one of the IU regional campuses to get their four-year degree, they can know from the very beginning that they're going to be able to be admitted into the four-year school without any question, as long as they get at least a 2.5 grade point average while they're with us at Ivy Tech.
That's great. Dr. Baker, is there any economic opportunities or savings, for that matter, that that any Ivy Tech student that wants to follow through and to be able to apply for going to their following through on their education with IU, they'll be able to benefit from, especially now with the finances being pretty tight with the pandemic and all?
Yes, for sure. And first of all, several of the state universities are beginning or already have put in place some pretty lucrative financial aid scholarship opportunities to encourage transfer students. There was a time when most financial aid dollars got directed towards incoming freshman students. And while that's probably still true to some extent, we've really seen four-year schools begin to step up and offer more incentives to students to transfer after their first 2 years, because I think universities are seeing that, after all, those upper-level classrooms are usually the ones that are not as full. Even though most everything is being done right now virtually because of the COVID crisis, there's capacity at that junior and senior year, and so incentivizing students through scholarship is becoming more and more popular among the four-year institutions. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other piece I will mention, it's probably somewhat of a given, but the tuition level at Ivy Tech for the first 2 years is several thousand dollars less per year than it would be at a four-year institution. So conservatively, if a student wants to take the first 2 years at Ivy Tech and then transfer to a regional campus, they're going to save at least $6,000 off the tuition they would pay if they went to the four-year campus at the regional for the full 4 years. So there's a definite savings just in terms of the rack price of tuition between Ivy Tech and the four-year regional campuses.
Now, Dr. Baker, is there any place that anybody who's interested in what we've been talking about here, the Ivy Tech and the IU regional campuses agreement, can find out more about it and to be able to take advantage of it?
There sure is. I would say the first thing they should do, this agreement went into effect June 1st, so just earlier this week, this agreement is now officially in place, and so any student who is admitted into Ivy Tech in the fall in one of the programs that are covered could contact and should contact the Ivy Tech admissions office, and they can contact really any of the campus's admissions office, depending on which campus they want to attend. And that office, the folks there, the academic advisors there, can explain which programs are covered by the agreement. There's a lot of details that I know we don't want to get into on a conversation like this, but that are important to students. We have staff that are ready to have that conversation with students right now. And then it's important to make sure that people understand and that students and stakeholders understand this is a collaboration. So we want those students to also have conversations while they're at Ivy Tech with the four-year regional campus, maybe it's IU Northwest, mm-hmm. where they plan to transfer, so that they can continually get guidance on making sure that transfer is seamless. And, of course, then we want the student to begin pursuing academic excellence and make sure they have that 2.5 GPA, which is what's required for this agreement to kick in.
Dr. Russ Baker is the Vice President for Academic Affairs at Ivy Tech Community College, and thank you very much for spending time going over this agreement, guaranteed admissions agreement, as it's called. Ivy Tech Community College is set up with all of the IU regional campuses, including taking advantage of IU Northwest. We appreciate you spending time, and we hope that a lot of students with Ivy Tech follow through on this, take advantage of this new agreement.
I appreciate it. Thanks again.
You're listening to a Best of Regionally Speaking. The Indiana Youth Institute has put out some good information, and in the latest column that you can see online at IYI.org, Tammy Silverman, who is the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, talks about what kind of ways that parents, the grown-ups in the family, whether they're parents or caregivers, can give youngsters the assurance and the guidance that they need when it's time to answer those very difficult questions about the coronavirus pandemic. And Tammy Silverman, thank you for joining us, and fill us in first on some of the ideas that you've gathered together that will come up with the advice that people can find out more if they want to read online.
There's so many articles that I think we're all kind of just awash. And so what we did was try to look through some of those that we know are really tuned into developmental needs of kids. So obviously we're all going to the CDC, but they actually have a special section for caring for children. Psychology Today is one of those. They have put out a pandemic toolkit for parents, as well as the National Association of School Psychologists. So that's a mouthful. But again, they're really talking about how do we help our children or children of those we care for cope with this, and what's a normal response for a child, right? I mean, we really need to know what's we need to be paying attention to and what's quite normal for them during these uncertain and challenging times.
I imagine it really does come down to how old your child is, or the person that you're going to talk to is, maybe I should say, whether it's your child or whether it's somebody you're taking care of. And you know what kind of response you're going to get if you address, say, a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old compared to a teenager.
You're absolutely right, Chris. And you know, that's the case in so many things. But I think, again, when we're so absorbed and as all of this new information was coming to us, we might not think to calibrate our responses to the age of children. But it's really important that we do. So, for example, for young children, it's important to keep those discussions of the coronavirus very brief and simple. You know, it's really, they want that reassurance that adults in their lives, be that their family members, their teachers, their community leaders, that we're working to keep them safe and healthy. You really don't need to go into a lot of details. Obviously, you want to go over the whole hand-washing thing with them, and I think we probably all have done that, but really the details of daily tallies of how many individuals have been tested and who's ill and that kind of thing is too complex for this age group. And with this age group, it's really important to know that stress and anxiety can show up as a loss of appetite. They may be extra clingy. They may thumb suck, or they may have some regression in their developmental milestones. All of those things are quite normal, and yet we probably want to lean in a little bit and give them that extra time to snuggle if they need it. Talk them through, and again, keep them talking as much as possible.
Do you think that maybe with the younger people, it might be easier to explain things? You don't have to go into as much detail?
Sure. Well, and we know that once they get a little bit, you should anticipate more precise questions from elementary and early middle schoolers. The little ones can sense that there's a disruption to the routine, and they might have some general questions. The older they get, the more precise those questions are going to be. And so they're really often concerned about what's going on in their area, what's going on with their school, what are the chances that they're going to get sick, what's going to happen when they return to school. Obviously, we don't have all the answers to those questions, and that's okay. But we can help them by giving them the facts that we do know. You can talk about, we do know that your teachers are working really hard to keep things on track. We do know that people are looking forward to getting back to school. You know, and be very straightforward about what we do and what we don't know, and make sure that they understand how the disease is spread and what everyone can do to reduce their own risk.
I know that our Lake County public health officer mentioned in a recent conversation that it's important to not only to be healthy mentally as well as physically in all the ways that you can, but also kind of limit your screen time. That is, don't spend so much time in front of the television and or the computer and absorbing too many details. You don't need to be updated all that often. And you think that maybe it's the same way when it's talking with the youngsters about this?
You bet. Every single one of these experts and these advice articles that are really evidence-based say limit access to screens, including television, internet, phone, social media, you know, the whole game. at the same time, when that pops up, you often hear parents say, yeah, right, because now the kids are doing e-learning, many of them, and they don't have those, perhaps those after-school activities taking care of their time. So again, we know that that's going to be a balance and a juggling act, but really limiting their exposure to the news right now is really important, and time block that. That doesn't mean you want to cut it off, right? Because we all need to know, and particularly the older your child gets, the more interested in world events they're going to be and what's going on. However, it's really important that we help them determine fact from fiction, right? And they can really get caught up on some of those sites or sources that may not be fact-based. That's where we can step in and make sure we're really helping them out with that information that's coming through their screen.
Is it also very important, too, to make sure the youngsters get outdoors, get some fresh air? They may be getting it in school when they go out for recess, but they don't have that when you're at a stay-at-home situation.
Absolutely. You know that they do all the time, even walking through the hallway. Some of them, if you've walked through a middle or high school, those kids are getting some steps in. So it's important that we help them stay active when they're at home. So whether that's taking little breaks from work, whether that's scheduling recess time and outside time, and really encouraging the kids to come up with ideas for how they can stay active and moving around during these times.
I know it's very difficult for young people who have very busy lives with their friends, with the sports activities, with dancing and all kinds of other extracurricular activities normally that they don't have now because they have to stay at home and stay away from, unfortunately, their friends and other people, including grandparents, I would imagine, too, in the same situation. What kind of advice can the IYI offer up to parents and caregivers to be able to tell youngsters they're still loved very much, that we still care for you very much?
Absolutely. And we need to know that we need to show them that we understand they're frustrated, they're fearful, they have concerns. It's okay for them, and it's quite understandable and normal for them to be angry or disappointed or sad about these changes in their schedules. And we need to validate that. We need to hear them, and we need to say we understand. You know, it's frustrating for many parents as well not to be able to engage with their student with those activities. At the same time, this is a great time for us as adults to model flexibility, patience, being really creative. Maybe we can engage with those teammates. Maybe it's just steering Zoom or FaceTime or whatever that is that you're using. And we can really step up and show them what it means to be resilient and compassionate all at the same time.
Well, Tammy, thank you for the words of advice that has come from going through a lot of information from a lot of experts that can help out. And we hope that our listeners will be able to take that advice in hand and go on IYI.org and take a look at it yourself and find out more and take notes on some of these things you have to see. And thank you for spending some time in this pandemic with us.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
Tammy Silverman's President and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. This is Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Well, during this time with the challenges of the coronavirus outbreak that has swamped the country, and particularly on a physical as well as a mental basis, people have to stay at home. And we have the challenges not only from the lockdowns with people having to stay at home, but they have to stay vigilant and with concerns about the opioid epidemic that is also out there. It's been there a lot longer than the coronavirus epidemic, of course. And then in turn is what organizations like with the Code 3 Association. We have the executive director, Joe Abdallah, to talk about it, and in particular about a way to help to be able to catch the warning signs of substance abuse that might be hidden in the home. Mr. Abdallah, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you for having me.
If you will, tell us first about the problems that the Americans face these days, not only with having the stay-at-home orders issued by our states and our communities, but also the problems that folks that have been in such close quarters have to face, and if they happen to have the substance abuse issues, whether they're being treated for them or not.
Well, I think the opioid epidemic, as it was, is clearly a problem in this country. I think that's severely compounded with the COVID-19 virus because there are a lot of triggers, you know, which can be set off by not having a job, worrying about how you're going to pay your rent or mortgage, and all of that pushes a lot of our kids in recovery back to use, as well as those that are currently using. So I think that is a huge issue. And we've come up with a platform to try and help parents go through a child's room after seeing certain behavioral changes and go through a room, again, not intrusively. I think good policemen are nosy, and I think good parents are nosy. But a very kind of casual way to go through a room to find out if your kid is misusing opiates or other illicit drugs.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know your experience in past careers is primarily with a criminal investigation. And over the years in working on cases from wherever you happen to be working, whether it's in state or a federal level, that you come across some of these issues that have come up, have you found that your experiences in turn have helped for the Rally Cares educational program, as it's called, helped to kind of get things set? So now that we're in the COVID-19 pandemic, that it's easier to deal with trying to discover these issues ahead of time before they balloon into something really bad?
Absolutely, 100%, because I think early intervention shows that early intervention with long-term treatment are our greatest success rates. And I was a policeman for 30 years, and I spent 28 of that in narcotics enforcement, so I was on the enforcement side for 30 years. Now I'm on the educational side, and a big part of our tour was put together by parents who had lost kids to addiction. So the tour is filled with items that they saw daily, things that they didn't know then that they know now, and things that they wanted to pass on. So that's a big part of the tour.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us first about this tour itself, or the exhibit itself, that we should say that it's been out there now. It's kind of expanded onto online because we can't actually physically see the exhibit, but the virtual exhibit is just as graphic. Tell us about how they are similar and how they're different.
They're very similar. The only difference would be is when we're physically traveling the country with the trailer, we're able to interact with parents, loved ones, educators, grandparents that come through the trailer to answer questions. That's the only real difference. The tour is almost identical to what you would see in the physical trailer, and we walk parents and educators and loved ones around the trailer, and we point out signs and indicators of the misuse of opioids through what is literally the mock. The trailer is literally a mock of a teenager's bedroom, including a bathroom, a closet, the bedroom with the dresser.
Yeah. What kind of reactions have you gotten from folks that, of course, have seen the hands-on actual physical exhibit and now the virtual exhibit that's out there as well?
The physical trailer has been wonderful. We cannot keep up with the requests we get from churches, high schools, government associations, private communities. We cannot keep up with the requests. And the really good thing is, we've been in about 20 to 25 states now. There's always a tour where parents are going through, and usually a mom will see something in the tour and leave the trailer upset because she's seen an item recently in her child's room. And the really good thing is Rally usually partners us with prevention treatment specialists at all of our events, so we can get that parent to someone to speak to from a prevention and treatment side to help guide them in the right direction for their kid. Mm-hmm. And it's very gratifying.
Now, we are here in Northwest Indiana, which is in the Chicago area. Have had a chance to get the physical exhibit up this way so that people can get to see it? Or are there maybe plans once the shutdown orders have been lifted to be able to bring it up here? So family members, parents in particular, will actually get to see this and learn the things physically as well as what they can see online right now.
We've been to Chicago once before this pandemic started. We have plans to come back, of course. The only platform that we'll have until, you know, things are cleared around the country or the country is opened back up will be the virtual platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we would encourage not just parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, any adult that even knows people with kids. I mean, you could watch it and possibly save someone's life by an item that you see there that someone might reference to you that they've seen.
Have, as far as you know, any lives been saved by not only seeing the parents and other people seeing the physical exhibit, but also the online exhibit as well, the virtual one?
The virtual was recently released, so I don't have much feedback on that.
Yeah.
I can tell you with the physical trailer, with just the moms traveling throughout the country that have seen things in the trailer and then were paired with prevention specialists to get their kid help, I would say absolutely that we save lives. And I can tell you that on each of our trips, there's always parents that see the advertisement and come through and they'll have a conversation with me about losing a child to opioid addiction. And we'll walk them through. And although sometimes it's kind of painstaking for them, there's always a hug afterwards and people thanking us for what they do, and that if they would have had that information available, it could have saved their child. So the work is very gratifying that we're doing right now.
Okay, Joe, if you will, tell us what the web address is so we know how to look for the virtual exhibit as it's out there now. And obviously, we'll look for the physical one when it comes to Northwest Indiana and the Chicago area soon. What's the URL so people can look it up and take an actual tour of the teenager's bedroom as you all have set it up?
It is rally, RALIUSA.org. And on the homepage, you will see a link to the virtual platform of the trailer tour. Once you enter it, you will see different icons throughout the bedroom that you can click on, which will show you videos and still photos as well as description of the items.
Joe Abdallah is the executive director of the Code 3 Association, which is an organization that is working with a group called Rally Cares. It's spelled R-A-L-I, Cares. They put out there online now an actual online platform that's created following up on a traveling exhibit, which is a very important tool to help family members be able to find the signs of substance abuse that might be hidden in the home. That's where we're all staying right now because of COVID-19. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Gary Community School Corporation is, of course, as the rest of us through the pandemic, going through distance learning, I guess they call it. It's learning by computer as opposed to being in the classroom since schools are out right now. And some students in the Gary Community School Corporation are trying to deal with technology that maybe their families don't have. Well, the school corporation is getting help from some partners, in particular the Easier Foundation, which is partnering with the Wisconsin-based energy company Michaels and the Indiana American Water Company to help provide some laptops for Gary area school students to help them in their online lessons. And with us, we have the founder and chairperson with the ECR Foundation, Cherise White, with us. Cherise, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, take a moment first and tell us what the ECR Foundation is all about. So people that may not be familiar with it, they'll see how the organization, locally based and created, is helping folks locally.
The acronyms for ECR: E is for Educate, C is Communicate, I is Innovate, E is for Entrepreneurs, and R is for Relationships. And the foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that was created to educate, empower, and equip our youth to realize their full potential and achieve their dreams through innovation and entrepreneurship. The foundation is designed to enhance, motivate, educate students on structured initiatives and increase the students' awareness in the area of college preparation, along with providing an opportunity to receive scholarships.
Nice to have Michaels. Being an energy-related company, they're very much familiar with new technology. That's part of their business, as a matter of fact, in the energy business. So they're easily adaptable to helping organizations out. How did they come into play in this particular case with the laptops going to students in the Gary schools?
We have a board member. Paige Rothrock is a board member, and she works for Michael's. And what we have done is, since we can't meet with our students, we generally meet with them twice a month. And first part of the month, what we do is work with them on their projects. And the end of the month, we take them to an entrepreneur's location. So Paige had set it up for one of her colleagues to be able to provide a workshop for the students. And so now, since we can't meet with them, we're trying to be innovative and meet with them through Cisco WebEx, which is on the same order as Zoom. And so we've met with them, we've hosted workshops, but prior to that, we've been calling and texting them just to let them know that we're here for them, care for them, whatever it is that they need. And so Paige asked one day, she wanted to call them individually instead of texting them to see what they actually needed. Mm-hmm. And she talked to a parent, and a parent told her that she has two computers in her home and seven children.
Yeah, that's where I suspect that's probably pretty much the case, that there may be, may not be in some cases, though, may be computers, but they're all busy, and a student can't be able to dedicate one for their education. They have to share it with so many people.
That's correct. When Paige shared that with us, that she talked to her colleagues at work, and they agreed to donate laptops. So I sent an email to the rest of our board members, and we also have a board member, Francisco Ochoa, and he is with the Indiana American Water, and they responded and donated computers as well.
That's
the
great.
Laptop computers.
That's great.
As well.
I understand you have some other partners in this venture as well, too, a couple local ones.
Right. Chicagoland Popcorn came along with us and donated popcorn for the students and their families. And John Will Anderson Boys and Girls Club, Rose, is so wonderful. We partnered with her to be able to work with the students. So the students that are in our program were initially from the Boys and Girls Club.
Wow. Now, the Boys and Girls Club, the John Will Anderson Boys and Girls Club, is located here in Lake County, and they obviously have a chance to see a lot of these youngsters on a regular basis, don't they? So they're very much attuned to helping their educational process in this time of a pandemic.
Absolutely. They have anywhere from 200 to 300 students that attend on a daily basis. So, you know, this has affected them as well. So, you know, whatever that we can do to be able to be a help, that's what we were standing in to do.
If you will, go down the list of the students and where they normally go to school. Tell us who all is involved in the project, getting the laptops, and what kind of benefits they're getting now to see from it.
Well, we have students from various schools, the Gary, Westside, Steel City Academy, 21st Century, Calumet New Tech, Thea Bowman. So it's a wide range.
Yeah.
We have 14 students in the program.
That's great. That's great. When they got their laptops by way of the folks with not only the ECR Foundation, but with Michaels and Indiana American Water, what was the reaction when they actually got a chance to hold their own laptop?
They were so excited and really, really appreciative. And when we distributed them, we had them to come up to the Boys and Girls Club. We had their parents to bring them. We didn't want it to just have to drop off the student, pick it up, and then leave. So mm-hmm. we asked the parents to stay. And they were really excited. We tried to make it like a little small miniature event for them. And then in addition to them receiving laptops, they also received the popcorn. So they were really excited. And you can tell that some of them didn't have them at home. And they're just in need, just really in need. You know, you go from being in school every day to basically being snatched out of school to go home to do e-learning. And if that was not taught to you, you know, prior to, so some of that could have just been a challenge. We did have a student to say it was a little hard for her because when you're in class, you're working directly with the teachers. Now she feels she's receiving more work, and it's a little harder for her when the teacher is not here in front of her.
Are there any other projects related to this one or other projects that the ECR Foundation is on the drawing board with or actually getting started on here besides the laptop program?
Yes, we will be working with them through the summer. But I can tell you this, we have two programs under the umbrella, the ECR students that I mentioned meeting with them mm-hmm. on their innovation and entrepreneurship. And then we also are a partner with the city of Gary 2 years ago, engaged in awarding scholarships to students for post-high school study. And the pool of those students that are graduating seniors have been accepted for admission to an accredited 2-year, 4-year college. So what happens is, at the beginning of the school year, we provide them with specific requirements. And once they have completed those requirements and it's been approved by the advisory council, the students have an opportunity to receive scholarships. So what we do is, in addition to the workshops we've been having, we have blended both the groups in together to have an opportunity to learn from one of our speakers that have been with us. So we're excited. We know that we're a little challenged what we can do and what the possibility of the new normal is. So we are anticipating being able to continue to be involved with them.
Well, Charisse, thank you for all the information and good luck to everybody involved in the project. And congratulations to all the recipients of the laptops that help keep their learning up in this very trying time for everybody and for them to be sure.
Well, you know, thank you. And I just wanted to share, if anyone would like to make donations, they're welcome to visit our website, which is www.ecr.org.
Charisse White is the founder and the chairperson for the ECR Foundation. ECR Foundation is partnering with the Wisconsin-based energy company Michaels and along with Indiana American Water Company and local businesses, Chicago Land Popcorn, as well as the John Will Anderson Boys and Girls Club here in Lake County to help make sure that the students attending school in the Gary area, not only in the Gary Community Schools, but schools around it, will have an opportunity to continue their education at home with their own laptops. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. A teenager here in Northwest Indiana has taken the dream of a youth center to the next level. And let's find out more about the young lady who is interested in the youth center in the city of Gary. Aaliyah Stewart is with us. She's with her family members in Maryville right now. Thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
give us an idea what got you started in thinking about a very ambitious project, because that's usually a youth center is something that a group of people end up having to start, but you've taken it on all by yourself, I guess, with some help from friends. Tell us how it all got started.
Well, first, giving honor to God, because it's all God that gives me the strength and the ideas to do the things that I do. Mm-hmm. I started my nonprofit organization at 14 years old, and now I'm 19, and I started it in honor of my two brothers that were killed due to senseless gun violence in Gary, Indiana. So what I wanted to do with the I Am Them Hope Youth Center was build a horizon for young people in the community to experience different and see different, and to learn how to express their potential and purpose, especially if they've been through trauma. So the idea of the center was to bring something positive to Gary, to be a light, a beacon of light for young people in my community.
Now, I understand that you created the foundation. It's called the ASW Foundation, I guess, after the deaths of a couple of your brothers. Tell us, if you will, about Anthony White Jr. and about James Anderson, and what kind of guys they were. And in turn, obviously, the tragedy is a good inspiration, but there had to be others, I'm sure.
Yes. Anthony was 16 years old when he was killed, and I was 7 years old. Anthony was so adorable. He was a ladies' man, very intelligent and athletic. He played basketball, baseball. He was into a lot of different things in Gary, like bitty ball, things like that, and he was graduating from Maryville High School. James, he was funny. That was the brother that was very funny. He was athletic as well. He played basketball at Bailey and a lot of different things like that. But James was very good with his hands. So trade was good for him. So that comes along with bringing trade into the youth center, mm-hmm. because he was very good with his hands and he loved music. So he was just talented. Both of them were very talented and handsome and loving in their own ways.
I understand that besides being a dutiful sister to both these guys, you're also a pretty good motivational speaker. Tell us how you got started in that, and how did that lead you in a way to help get the support that you needed to be able to create the Youth Center, which is to become a project very soon?
Well, I decided to do influential speaking my senior year of high school. My mom made me do advanced composition as part of my classes. And I just absolutely loved the way that I could tell my story, but I wanted to tell it on more of an intellectual platform. You know, I wanted to be able to speak at churches and political events, but also I wanted to relate to young people in the neighborhood. So I started speaking in 2015. My first speaking engagement was at Theo Bowman High School, so thank you to the principal there mm-hmm. that allowed me to come and speak at. I was 14 years old. And that was my first speaking engagement. And then from that point on, I started speaking at other places and traveling to speak. And then my senior year, that's when I came up with I wanted to be full-time influential speaker.
I know that the ASW Foundation has been very, very busy in here in Northwest Indiana and in Gary and Maryville area in particular to try to stop the very senseless gun violence that's going on in the communities. And that, I'm sure, led you to contacts that you made over time that, in turn, the organization helped be able to get the lease for the 6,100-square-foot building that you looked at 2301 Virginia Street. Tell us a little bit about the neighborhood where the youth center will be built and how the project is coming along.
The project is going along great. We're mm-hmm. working right now to get everything going and just trusting God with everything. Due to COVID-19, we've had to delay some things, but they're not denied. So that's good. And then we're right behind the Color Door Gary Housing Authority. So we're right behind those apartments. And we're very excited to get the kids to come over. We're excited for everyone to be a part. And so we're just working and praying and getting everything ready and done so that when COVID-19 is over, we can hopefully hurry and open so that the kids can have something to do.
That's a great opportunity to bring young people in since you're so close to the area where many of them live. And what kind of programs would you like to set up in the center itself once it's completed and ready to use?
So we have a couple of different programs that we'll be running. Early childhood development is one. Tutoring, college and career readiness, leadership and social development, engineering, media and technology, athletics and recreational, visual and performing arts, And we're also working on the name of a program to teach students about healthy choices in the field of eating, understanding that you are what you eat, and your body is tired and drained by the things that we're putting inside of our body.
Now, obviously, an organization has to be able to raise the money. You have raised some, quite a bit already, $20,000, going toward some of the important things to start out with, building permits and supplies and startup costs and the like. But you're still out there looking for support. Tell us how support you're seeking and how it's coming along so far there.
A lot of people have been donating. So for anyone that's listening that would love to donate and support our vision or even donate time, come volunteer, come help or anything like that, please visit our website, which is iamthem.org, iamthem.org. To donate, you can go on our iamthem.org website and click the donate button, and it will take you to our GoFundMe. And from there, you can donate. If you just want to volunteer, you can go under community service on iamthem.org and send us an email, and I'll respond to it.
Well, Aaliyah, when do you hope that if things go well and the pandemic subsides a bit and more work gets to be done soon, when do you hope to have the youth center opened up?
I'm hoping towards the fall. If not the fall, towards the end of the year. But whenever it happens, it's going to be great.
Well, Aaliyah, thank you for spending time with us to tell us more about yourself and about the ASW Foundation that you've created and all of the work that has happened so far up to now and the selection of a site for a youth center in Gary. And we wish you the best, and we'll offer a few prayers as well, too, to help push things along. Thank you very much for talking with us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. And that's it for a special edition of Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll tune in to Regionally Speaking tomorrow.